All right. Well, welcome everybody to Fearlessly Feral Living. I have a wonderful featured guest today. Tracy Brown is joining us. But before we get started with our conversation, I just want to welcome you to Fearlessly Feral Living, broadcasting to you from the Woogie Ranch out here in the back 40 of northwestern Nevada, where I'm a half an hour away from the nearest gas station and the nearest grocery store. And our mission here at Fearlessly Feral Living is to provide a strong and unshakable inner foundation that works for long-term successful living. And our purpose is to activate inner self-awareness. And our vision is a world in which everyone lives wild and free. In other words, fearlessly feral. So, yes, I am very happy to welcome Tracy Brown here today. And my normal practice with my guests is to ask them to send me a short bio. But I had a chat with Tracy last week, and she said she doesn't do bios with her guests anymore. She said she begins with three things that she knows about her guest and reveals those, and then asks her guests if there's anything they want the audience to know. And so I thought that's a really good idea. And I told her, I said, I'm probably going to steal that. So I have a bio here. But I also went and stalked Tracy's page for a little bit to get to get some tidbits, three things I knew about her. One I knew already, that she loves to skate. She loves roller skating as much as I love horseback riding. She's out roller skating all the time, and I just love seeing those posts about her roller skating. I watch the videos. It's really cool to watch. She also is like me in that whenever she gets ready to travel, she's one of those people that starts packing just a few hours before it's time to get to the airport. I'm like that too. I'm like that too. And then there was a spring, I believe it was the first day of spring post or spring solstice or something. And you had some of your favorite spring quotations posted. And I looked at these and I thought, these are wonderful. I want to read these on the podcast. So here's some quotes that Tracy posted on her Facebook page for us to enjoy and think about. This one is by Lucy Maud Montgomery. That is one good thing about this world. There are always sure to be more springs. Susan J. Bissonette, an optimist is the human personification of spring. Oh, I love that one. An optimist is the human personification of spring. I might have to use that one of these days. This one's from Mark Twain, and I have found this to be true here. Today it's cold out and it's supposed to be spring. And yeah, we had snow a couple of days ago. In the spring, I have counted 136 different kinds of weather inside of 24 hours. Yep. And she says in parentheses, it's so true for Texas. So apparently, spring happens all over everywhere, not just in Texas or Nevada. Hal Borland said, no winter lasts forever. No spring skips its turn. And Robert H. Schuller said, never cut a tree down in the wintertime. Never make a negative decision in the low time. Never make your most important decisions when you are in your worst moods. Wait. Be patient. The storm will pass. The spring will come. That might turn into a podcast episode for me. There's all kinds of yummy stuff in that one. And then from her bio, she has a book called Stained Glass Spirit, Becoming a Spiritual Community Where Oneness Does Not Require Sameness. And she has practiced and taught New Thought spirituality for more than 35 years, beginning at Unity Dallas in 1986. She's currently affiliated with the Centers for Spiritual Living and is a licensed practitioner. She is a recipient of both the Ernest Holmes Award and an honorary doctorate. She's a founder, and I'm a member of this group, and I love this group. It's on Facebook. It's called What Is Mine to Do? And it makes me think, okay, what's mine to do today? And I stalk that group more than I participate in it, but I'm there. And I always think, okay, what is mine to do in a situation? And when I look at that, it brings me back to that quote about don't make a negative decision when you're angry. Yeah, because a lot makes me angry these days. And I have to get work to get back to a place where I feel like I'm of value to myself and others. So this is Dr. Tracy Brown. And Tracy, are there any other tidbits that you would like our listeners to know about yourself?
I just find that all so fascinating. And I love hearing those quotes again because one thing that people can know about me is I love quotations and I love using quotations to make a point. I love using quotations to inspire myself and others. I study quotations and have a whole row of books on my bookshelf that are quotations from different cultures and all, because I am amazed at how easy it can be to make a point that I don't have the words for, but someone has said something really smart. So I love quotations almost as much as I love roller skating. And the only other things, just to give people a little context, yes, I am an African American woman who grew up in the Midwest in St. Louis, Missouri, and while I am many other things, an author, a speaker, a business owner, a poet, I'm a lot of things, a lot of labels describe different facets of who I am. And I'm really very clear that being Black and being female in a country called USA has shaped a lot of what I have experienced, good and bad. And so I think that that is something that is critical to understanding and having a context for things that I say and do. So I think that's the only thing I would add.
So can you share with us some of the good being Black and being a woman in the United States of America? Can you share with us some of the good experiences you have had and how they shaped you, and maybe some of the bad experiences you've had and how those shaped you as well?
Because that's really easy. And it is interesting that often the good and the bad are wrapped around the same thing. One example, being in the fourth grade and being bused to a school across town because the city of St. Louis was under a desegregation order. And so the answer was to bus, the answer selected or the strategy selected was to take children from Black neighborhoods and bus them to schools in white neighborhoods. And it's really funny to think back to how bad that was, how bad it was to be a fourth grader who gets off of a bus into a mob of white adults who are carrying signs and calling you names and telling you you don't belong and literally yelling and screaming at you. That is bad. That is traumatic. But it was so good in shaping me and in shaping me in lots of ways. Number one, I don't have to expect that everybody's going to like me because these people don't know me. They don't know me. Right? They're just seeing me as a member of some group they don't like. And so they're yelling at me, but they're not yelling at me. And so being able to separate and say your individual identity and your group identity are two things, but there are going to be people who don't like you just because of their perception of who you are without getting to know you. So I grew up never expecting, like, you don't do things to get people to like you because they're not going to like you anyway. There's nothing you can do to make them like you. So that whole people pleasing piece, I got to bypass that because of a lessons that I was learning even before fourth grade. But there, another good thing that came out of that, probably the best, that was at the beginning of the school year. But by the end of the school year, even, like a month or two later, they were not there anymore because clearly they didn't get what they wanted. We were still going to that school in that neighborhood. And by the end of the school year, the children, we didn't all become close friends, but there was respect at recess or at lunch or whatever. And so it was like, oh, people can change. They don't have to, they may be attacking you now, but they won't be attacking you a year from now. That kind of lesson was a really good lesson that you can withstand adversity and adversity can transform to respect. So I like at every stage of my life, I have those kinds of examples. And probably the biggest example for me of what was really good about growing up Black and female is that I was taught from a very young age that what's in the history books or what the general stereotypes are about Black people don't define you. And I grew up being taught, if you come from a lineage of people directly and indirectly related who have withstood the worst that humanity could offer. And that's who you are. You come from kings and queens in Africa, and you come from people who are so resilient and so smart and so determined that they could live through being treated inhumanely because they knew at some point in the future you would have an opportunity to do things they never imagined. And so that was really good. And the image of even though Black women who I knew were working hard, almost all the Black women I knew had jobs, two-parent families, but the women worked. So I got all these examples of course, you can choose to do work, and of course, you're going to get your education. And of course, it's not about money. It's about being a responsible citizen in the world who makes a positive contribution in life. Those are the example, those are the experiences that I had growing up that, yes, taught me in society as a whole, there are stereotypes. You will be affected by them because you can't control what other people do or say. All you can do, Tracy, is control how you take it up and what you choose to do. Now, if that is not the foundation of metaphysics and self-responsibility and self-actualization, it's like no wonder that I was ultimately later in life drawn to science of mind because it just mirrored the lessons I learned growing up.
Yes, that self-actualization piece and that personal responsibility piece. And I will never forget when I when that sunk in for me. You know, growing up as a woman, there were things that happened to me that shouldn't happen to anybody. And yet I survived them. And as time went, and I survived all that stuff by drinking alcoholically, when it came time to get sober, and I was about 10 years sober, and another change had happened in my life that had devastated me. And I picked up a book by Neil Donald Walsh. And that was not my introduction to Science of Mind, but it was my reintroduction into it. And in that book, he said that we have total and complete responsibility for our lives, that God doesn't do things to us, that God wants for us what we want for ourselves. I know. Yeah. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Okay, two things here. I got to stop being a victim and start taking personal responsibility for my life. And this thing that other people are calling God, it's not what they're telling me it is. And I never believed what they told me it was anyway. I just didn't really have a concept of what it was true for me. But that started me on that journey. And it is foundational for Science of Mind teaching. And it's so wonderful. Lately, I've been hearing people calling Science of Mind a liberation theology. And I agree with the liberation part. Not entirely certain I would call it a theology, but put together, the two words sound kind of nice.
Well, you know, for me, it was really interesting because I had never heard of New Thought, and I had never heard of Science of Mind or Unity or Divine Science, or I had never heard of any of that growing up. I was raised in a Christian church, in a Christian family, in a Baptist church, and I loved church, and I loved the lessons that I learned, which gave me a really good foundation, because I was in a Baptist church that didn't, I mean, yes, we learned about hell and, you know, but it wasn't a like hell and damnation message. It was really most consistently a message about following the example of Jesus and being an example of love in the world and having the courage to stand up in times of persecution and pain as Jesus did. Right. And so there was a lot of love for self, love and forgiveness for those who mistreated you, a lot of that message. And in the example set and in the situations that I found myself often in church, in school, just in my family, in the world, there really was a lot of focus on self responsibility, not just, you know, carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders, not that, but personal responsibility for defining who you were and who you wanted to be in the world, even in spite of externally defined limitations. What comes to mind for me, a couple of examples just dropped right in, you know, when I think about the adults who were in, you know, there was a dentist in my church who, you know, justified the stereotypes about being intelligent and being gentle or being angry as the stereotype, angry Black men. And, you know, he was the gentlest man. He was a dentist. He was known even outside of our community as an expert. But when he started his practice, right, part of the reason he was able to become a dentist was because there was so much segregation when he was younger, but they needed to train dentists to serve the Black community, right? Because the Black community could not go to a white dentist. And so it's like the way that the community made that work was a model that it wasn't, we're victims. You know, we see what the system is. But within that system, how do we self-actualize, or what is it possible to do? So, you know, I had a teacher in high school who was one of the first Black people, definitely, I think the first Black woman to get an advanced degree, a doctorate degree from a major well-known university in the US. And she was given some opportunities to like be the first Black faculty member at a few colleges, and she wanted to teach Black kids and give them hope. And she wasn't accepted in a lot of school systems. They didn't want her in their grade school or high schools. But she came to St. Louis, and the high school I went to is an historic high school. It was the first high school for Black students west of the Mississippi. And she was like, I want to go there. So here we have this, you know, Black woman who is not allowed to teach in many school systems around the US when she started teaching. But she came to be an example and, you know, would tell us, this is how it was for me. And you need to get your education because it's not going to be that way for you. But even if it is, maybe it'll be something else. Choose what's going to make a contribution to the world. What's your legacy? What 14, 15-year-old is thinking about? What is my legacy going to be? And we had adults around us who said, you do have to think about that. You can't wait till you're 50 years old to think about that. So you know, I'll admit fearlessly feral, right? You know, I've read what you've written about it before, but I went back and read that again. What does that mean to you? And this being wild and free and living without fear. And I had to sit with that a few days ago when I knew I was going to be talking to you again. I'm like, what does that really mean to me in the life that I've had? And I thought, you know, I'd think about it for 5 minutes and I'd be okay. I thought about it for like 2 hours, Karen. 2 hours. I did some journaling about it and all of that. And I realized that this will not be true for all Black people. And it won't be true for all Black women. But for me, in the time I grew up in the way I grew up, I thought, huh, I like the way fearlessly feral sounds. But I don't, if I waited to be fearless, I would never do anything. When I think back over my life, I would have not. Different, maybe a little now, but over my life, I would not have done anything. I was trained that you're going to be scared because there are going to be people standing outside the bus calling names, and you're afraid they're going to throw rocks any minute. And you have to take a deep breath, put your chin up, and keep moving toward what you have chosen or what you've committed to do, which is walk in this school and get your education. So I'm like, oh, courage.
Yes.
And then I thought, feral, wild and free, moving outside the bounds of socialization. What does society say you should be as a little girl? What does society say you should be as a woman? What does society say you should be? And to some degree, that was a little bit of an overlap because I've never done what society says I should do as a Black person. I've never been in that total box. I've been like, that box is too small. I am going to do all of this. But then I thought, oh, that's what taught me to be intentional. Choose.
Yes.
Choose. Okay, everybody is saying you have to do this, but that's not what you want to do. So choose. Everybody is expecting you to behave this way as a leader, but you see it didn't work for them. So why do you want to choose it for yourself? Choose something else. So my translation of fearlessly feral is Tracy being intention, courageously intentional.
I
And
like it.
we get to the same place.
Yes.
I took 2 hours of thinking and journaling and playing and saying, I want to understand this. And it fits. What language would I use to describe how I do that? I am courageous and I am intentional.
Courageously intentional. I'm going to write that down.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
I like it.
But it's like, oh, for me, that my the way my thinking went as I was finishing that up, it was, oh, it's the same. You know, I'm amazed that we are ever able to communicate anything with anybody because we rely so much on the words. And I was like, you know, actually, we are ending in the same place. So it's like, in that way, they're synonyms, even though the individual words may have slightly different meanings. It gets us to living a life we love and creating a world that is respectful of lots of different types of people.
Yes, and I will be honest with you, I am not totally fearless. But I do have courage. And I got that courage from all the things that science of mind teaches. And yeah, I'm in fact these days I'm more fearless more often than not. But I do have intentions. I do have intentions, and I have intentions to go out into the world, and I have intentions to purposely associate with people who don't think like I do, which is really scary. Really scary. And I get really quiet, and I'm not my normal self when I'm around people like that because I'm cautious, but I'm still there. I'm still there. Yeah, showing up as a voice as you do, and as I'd like to think I do, a voice that says we do not have to show up in this world like society tells us we have to show up. And we can be fearless in that, even in the midst of the fear that we're feeling because we're marching to the beat of a different drummer. We're paving our own road here. We're doing stuff that society is saying, well, you can't do that. And I'm like, why?
Like,
Why?
watch me, right?
Watch me. Yeah, watch me. So, and that leads to a lot of self-doubt, and it leads to a lot of questioning, and it leads to more fear. And so then I remember. I do my spiritual practices. I back it up and settle in, and I have prayer partners and I have mentors and I have people I speak to. I mean, you were one of them when I went and did something society told me I should not do. And that was pretty scary. When I thought back about it, I was like, oh geez, Karen, what'd you do now? And you said, yeah, I get that. I get why you're frightened. I would be too. And I felt, so much better with that, so much better. And yet I would do it again.
Well, especially now, because you did it, and guess what? You didn't die.
No, I didn't die. I didn't.
Right? You didn't get attacked. You didn't get dismissed from the world. And so now that's another brick in the foundation that, oh my goodness, I don't know what I was thinking when I did that. And now I can do something that feels the same way again and again and again. And I think for me, that's that building the bricks in the foundation, and then another row of bricks, and then another, then the foundation becomes really strong. And the reality is still, I'm standing on a really strong foundation. And when I am faced with those situations where there's a misunderstanding or it feels like I'm putting myself in danger, I still have a little nervousness. I still have some, sometimes big fear, depending on what it is. But I have this foundation where brick after brick after brick after brick after brick for decades that I have lived to talk about it later. Didn't always turn out in a positive way, but I'm still here. So of course I can step into that anxiety or that doubt and speak up or speak out, because I know it's not going to, you know, we even know when we're afraid young that it's not going to kill us, but that feeling of, will I be able to recover from this? Or am I creating an irreconcilable stalemate?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with me. I really appreciate that. Yeah. I know that what I chose, so what I chose to call this focus ministry, I know that it triggers some people and it activates others. Yeah. Exactly. And society, you know, society says, you can't do that. What do you mean, Fearlessly Feral? You can't do that. Oh, yes, I can. Watch me. Watch me. And I think that's what being fearlessly feral or courageously intentional is all about. It's being able to sit within ourselves and know precisely who and what we are, no matter what society tells us, and set an intention based on that knowledge and move forward, not just in spite of the fear, but perhaps because of the fear.
Yeah, there are times, I like that you said that, there are times when the fear or the anxiety is the sign that I have that, okay, you can't turn back now, right? The fact that I'm uncomfortable, or the fact that I know that what I'm about to say or do is going to piss some people off. They're not going to be happy with me. I know that, and it's not that I'm trying to make enemies or make people feel bad, but sometimes that is the cue or clue that, oh, that's why you have to speak up, Tracy, because there are other people who are thinking what you're thinking, they're feeling what you're feeling, and they will shirk back because they want everything to be nice. They want to play nice. They want people to like them. So they're not going to say what needs to be said. And for me, it's like, oh, this means I have to be the one to say it. I don't want to say it either. I don't want to ask the hard question. I would like that everybody sees me and they have a smile on their face when they see me and they can't wait to give me a hug. And if I'm afraid to say it because of emotional reasons, then it's like, Tracy, open your mouth, or Tracy, write the letter to the editor. Or Tracy, write a post and put it on Facebook because somebody needs to say it. And, you know, or go to the What Is Mine to Do group and post that article and at least give people something to think about and let them know they're not the only one thinking it.
Yes.
Right. And learning to care less about whether people like me, but stopping at the point that you don't have to like me, but you have to respect me as a person, or as if I'm, you know, in a particular role, you have to give me the same respect you would give a man in this role, or you have to give me the same respect you would give a person who is white in this role. Like, I will not accept in that. That's like, that is the bottom floor. There's no going beneath that. But if like me is up here, like, oh, we can break that barrier anytime, every time, every day. My life and my authenticity and my respect for myself does not require you to like me. But whether you like me or not, you will respect me. And that is, I have learned, actually, I guess because of, you know, growing up, I kind of got that lesson. But I have to admit, I didn't really recognize how much that was ingrained in me until I was in leadership roles for Centers for Spiritual Living. And that there was a lot of pressure to only say things that made people feel good. And if there were disagreements, not even with me, but involving other people, that it would, there was pressure to be the peacemaker and make everything all nice and right again. And I, that's really, really when I, you know, realized again, I probably realized it when I was early in my professional career, but then it was just so automatic and it, wow, what? But I had to learn it again in a conscious way because, yeah, there was a lot of pressure hiding important information that people needed to have because it wasn't favorable or positive. Like, we'll just, we, well, we don't, you know, we don't need to tell what? No, this is something that people need to know. So I don't know. I was surprised to be, you know, to have that lesson relearned.
Mm-hmm.
And even now that I'm not in official leadership roles so much, I'm on the couple of boards related to the organization, but I'm not in a direct leadership role. I still get that pressure. People will email me or text me and say, "Well, you should just be nicer," or "You should, you know, you ask questions that make people feel uncomfortable." Okay. Okay, I do, because I'm curious, or I want to see what our strategy is and know that we're moving in a certain direction. That doesn't mean I don't like people. That doesn't mean I think they're doing a bad job. I'm just asking a question.
Yeah.
I'm like, when did asking a question become an attack on someone's character?
I often ask that same question. Yeah.
What is that? What is
what
that?
Is that? Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, when we live a fearlessly feral, we have to be willing to. Here's what just came to mind. You have to be willing to live in fierce or ferocious love. Like, if I'm fearlessly feral and I'm living wild and free, and I want to create a world where that's the norm, then I can't ignore when people are in pain. I can't ignore when things are happening around me that will put me out of being wild and free into a cage. And sometimes I think anybody who's a parent can understand that. You want your kids to, you love your kids and you want your kids to love you. And sometimes you have to discipline them or ask them hard questions or go look in their room to see if they're hiding something in their drawers or.
Yeah. Yes, I do not have children, but I have faced those kinds of decisions with other members of my family. And and I am not sorry that I chose to say the things I said and stand up for the things that I knew needed to be stood up for. Yeah.
Not easy, but it is required. It is a demonstration of love.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Do you realize we've been talking for 40 minutes already?
Why am I not surprised?
It's happened again, Tracy. It's happened again. So I am going to ask you for if there's any last words that you want to leave us with before I close us out today.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I've already said for me to understand Fearlessly Feral, I had to go through a process to understand that the language for me would be intent conscious, courageously intentional. But when I was 16 years old, and this is what I want to leave people with, when I was 16 years old, I was in a class, English class or something, and the teacher had us write or choose a motto. Like, what do we think was our motto for life? And I am amazed that many, many decades later, I have not changed that motto. I've reviewed it many times, but I've never changed it. Because every time I review it, I'm like, no, that is still my motto. And this is the gift that I want to give everyone. You don't have to make it your motto, but please remember, you always have a choice. You always have a choice. You may not control everything that happens to you. I don't control everything that happens to me. But I do control what, how I choose to respond to what happens to me. And that's the, if you want to be fearlessly feral and live that kind of life, then I think that you've got to remember that you always have a choice. Thank you so much for inviting me to hang out with you. I love our conversations, and I'm so grateful.
Me too. I absolutely love our conversations. And I'm very grateful you came on board over here. And I want to mention Tracy's websites. She has three of them, stainedglassspirit.net. And I will put these in the show notes, reclaimjoy.com and tracybrown.com. And is also on Facebook, of course, as we've mentioned before. So I thank you very much for listening today. And I thank you very much for your support. Fearlessly Feral Living is a focus ministry of Centers for Spiritual Living, and thus your contributions are very much appreciated and fully tax deductible. And I will put the links to support us in the show notes as well as my website, fearlesslyferal.org. And once again, I thank you very much for listening, and I am knowing fearlessly feral living for me and for you.